This episode of She Explores is brought to you by VASC, whose footwear has built trust on the trail since 1964. VASC has been pushing the limits of trail footwear for over 50 years, with hiking, backpacking, and trail running footwear built to perform on any trail in any condition. Season after season, VASC is driven by a spirit of innovation. Field testing and consumer feedback power product development, ensuring that boots and shoes continually evolve to meet the needs of modern outdoor enthusiasts. Stay tuned for later in the episode. We talk to She Explores listener Maggie Paycon about hiking in Indonesia. Learn more at www.vasque.com. That's www.vasque.com. I'm Gail Straub, and you're listening to She Explores.
The word disability is the word given to us, used in society, right? Like something's missing or something's wrong. And I don't think of it as that. I think of it as an ability. My abilities are different than yours.
This is Karima Batts, founder of Adaptive Climbing Group, a series of programs which provide people with disabilities the opportunity to inclusively participate in the sport of climbing. Karima didn't set out to build a nonprofit, nor could she have predicted its growth or appeal. But Karima knows as well as anyone that, for better or worse, life lacks predictability. Karima grew up in New York City, a place that, if you're not from there, may come across as having less access to the outdoors than a city like Salt Lake. But Karima's experience says otherwise.
I'm a townie. I was born in Manhattan. I was raised in Brooklyn. I could tell you where all the stuff is. I don't go to the Empire State Building. I don't go see the Statue of Liberty. We hang out in Boulder in Central Park. That's what we do after work. And people don't even know there's bouldering routes in Central Park. You know, I'm also a Black woman. And I could tell you, there were times in my life where we were on food stamps and other forms of government assistance. But I also was a scout. And in senior year of high school, I was in the New York Park Rangers program that went on through college, AmeriCorps. And all of these things exist in our city. I was building trails. We were doing water testing in Gerritsen's Beach in Queens and doing testing on wildlife. These things exist. And I would love it if someone shot me a message to say, I'm visiting New York. Where can I go rowing? Want to go kayak on the Hudson River? I got you. Let's go.
As outdoorsy as she was growing up, Karima never really saw herself climbing. It wasn't until her left leg was amputated below the knee in 2009 that she even entertained the idea. Fighting cancer led to a lot of changes in her life.
The first time I even stepped foot in the climbing gym was 2010. I knew nothing of it. I thought it was crazy idea, silly thing to do.
Why would you say it's a silly thing to do?
Oh, I'm very much a planner. I'm a fearful planning person. I dig camping. I dig hiking trails. There's routes. I know where my water is. You know, there's a lot of planning that goes into climbing too, but I'm more of a, let's say this, outdoors with purpose. Oh, why are we hiking to the lake? Well, that's where we get fish and we fish and we eat this fish because we're hungry. You know, like there's a purpose. But it just so happened that post-cancer, as I was starting my recovery, my hair hadn't grown back in. I was still in the chemo wig. And I was going through a lot of physical and emotional setbacks and trials. When people have cancer, people think, oh, you beat cancer. Remission is not beating cancer. It's like, oh, we don't see it right now. And your body is now starting its recovery. And that recovery could take 3 years. It could take 5 years. During that time, my boyfriend at the time was trying to, you know, make sure I get out the house and like do something, right? And so he would take me with him on whatever things he was trying. And so he signed up for like a ballet class at Brooklyn Boulders. And he was like, oh, come on, let's try this climbing. I was like, yeah, that's a stupid idea. Can't do that. Don't know if you know it. Missing the leg here. You know, like, totally dismissed it.
Yeah.
But I went with belaying because he had to climb, so I had to belay him. So I was just like, well, I'll learn how to do this belaying thing for you, you know? And then I let that go. And then if you fast forward to officially getting the word that I was officially in remission and starting to like exercise and learn how to use my prosthesis and look towards recovering my health from the damage that chemo does to you and cancer does to you, I was visiting a friend who was in her second round of chemo, hanging out with her because that's what chemo buddies do. And I was just like, oh, you look good. By the way, don't ever say that to a cancer patient if you're not a cancer patient.
Okay, good to know.
But when we say it to each other, we know what we mean. And it's more about your feeling, not about what you look like, if you look healthy, if you look like you're dying. It's more about there's an inner glow inside of you. You're feeling positive. Yeah. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So I was like, wow, you look really good. I was like, what you been doing? She's like, I just came back from this trip with this organization called First Descent. And I was like, what is it? She was like, I went kayaking. She's showing me the videos. I was like, they let you go kayaking? My doctor won't let me do anything. Like, you know, I'm like, what's this about? And he's like, yeah, there was a bland guy kayaking too. You're like, oh, they let people with disabilities on this trip? Like, yeah, it's all like young adult cancer survivors. And it's really cool. And they have all of these experiences. And it just really helps to get away from your family, who you feel is putting an emotional pressure on you to be better, and you're trying to be good for them and be strong for them, and your doctors who are poking at you, and your home or the things that you can or can't do.
Karima didn't think she'd be able to afford a First Ascent experience like her friend did, especially with her medical bills. But it turned out they had scholarships available. It was the opportunity she needed to reconnect with her outdoorsy self. But she didn't want to do something she'd done before losing part of a leg to cancer.
So I apply for it. I look at all the list of the sports. I've done, obviously, like I said, canoeing before. I've done camping before. I've done bodyboard surfing in Jamaica before. And I was just like very depressed because all the things that I did before I lost my leg were either very hard or seemed very impossible at that point, right? And so it would just depress me every time I would try something and it wasn't exactly the same as it was before. I wasn't as good as it as I was before. So I was looking for something on the list that I thought was completely impossible for me to do. And I thought, well, if I fail at this, I'm meant to fail at this anyway. So yeah, this is good. This climbing thing. So I picked climbing, and Colorado Mountain School in Estes Park was the host. We did two weeks in Colorado.
Wow.
Learning how to climb with me and 11 other cancer survivors and fighters, because a couple people were still in treatment. It was very comforting to be around a lot of people who were like me, who were going through the same emotional stress that we put on ourselves and our families face on us. And we were eating great healthy food. Foods were prepared. It was just a fun atmosphere. We had yoga, we went on these trails, and it wasn't a pity party. We climbed the exact same routes. You know what I mean? Like, we went up the same trails. There was no separation between men and women, or disabled or not disabled. Me being the only fat chick too, and like, you know, there was none of that. Like, and it also made me kind of push harder and try harder, being in this sort of welcoming and very inclusive atmosphere. And it literally changed everything for me.
Wow.
Just the feeling of, first of all, completing something. I think that was the first time I ever completed something without having the depression of comparing it to how I did it before, you know?
Yeah.
And I used to refer to myself as Karima BC. And BC is a BC standard for before cancer. Well, Karima BC used to be able to moonwalk.
So you were able to take that feeling home with you.
Well, that's the thing. You go back home.
Yeah.
And home is still home. So now you're like, that was such a high. This was endorphins mixed with elation of feelings, mixed with physical endurance and testing. And I need this feeling again. You know what I mean? Yeah. It was very sort of druggy related, like addict related. And I was just like, oh my goodness, how can I keep doing this, you know?
Yeah.
So I went back to the outdoor store where I bought my things to prepare for this trip.
This store was EMS, Eastern Mountain Sports. She asked them for advice on where to find climbing and learned about the perks of working there at the time.
You know, I heard a coworker talking to another coworker about meeting at the climbing gym, and I was just like, oh, how much do those cost? You know, because I knew I went like a year before. And they're like, well, we don't pay, you know, because we work here. We get to climb for free. And I was like, really? What other things you get to do for free? Oh, we have a climbing school, it's EMS climbing school. We get 2 free guiding passes a season. I'm like, really? Like outdoor climbing? Wait, there's outdoor climbing in New York? Where is it at? You know what? You know, I was just like, where is it going? Oh my gosh. You know? So then I was like, okay, I need a job now. So I get some money. So I go climbing.
Yeah.
So I started applying for jobs. That is when I've noticed the discrimination about being a person with a disability. I wasn't like showing my metal leg, you know, I was wearing like maybe a pantsuit or a skirt. Or even saying that you recently survived cancer was like, you see their face change, you know?
Certain assumptions.
Yes, you're a liability. Or they feel that you can't do the job as well as someone who doesn't have a Karima BC. So, and you know, you're saying, oh no, you're being a stickler. You think they said that. I was like, no, because I spent 20 something years not being disabled and working. So I could definitely tell the difference of someone speaking to me differently or making insinuations during an interview. So I went to a law office and they had like a legal assistant job. I did that before in high school and first year of college. This is easy. I know how to do this. And they go, so, well, you have experience. Oh, you work for this lawyer? Oh, she's amazing. She's a legend. Yes, love her. She's great. By the way, this job requires you to be able to get files and carry them. And I was like, okay, sure, great. And our files are downstairs. And I'm like, okay. Like, why are they telling me this in an interview?
Yeah.
They're trying to say something about my physical ability. And then I don't get the job. So then afterwards, I was like, okay, I can't be too revealing. But then there's a law that says I have to be revealing. The law tells me on the application, I have to fill out whether or not I have a disability and that if I acquire any different types of accommodations. But there's no way anybody can prove that someone's not hiring you because of that.
Yeah. I don't know why the law is that way. Do you know why it is?
It has to do with liabilities as well.
Yeah.
So, for instance, I sued my job for discrimination or unsafe workspace.
Mm-hmm.
And they say, well, we didn't know that she had a disability.
Okay. Yeah.
So it's protecting both people, but in that same way, that leaves a loophole for someone to easily not hire you because you have a disability.
Karima did end up finding work at EMS, so she was able to take advantage of those benefits and climb more often. We'll learn about how Karima began sharing her love of climbing through Adaptive Climbing Group after a word from our sponsor, VASC. This episode of She Explores is brought to you by VASC, whose footwear has delivered trust on the trail since 1964. I talked with She Explores listener Maggie Pacon about hiking in Indonesia for her honeymoon.
So we went there for our honeymoon, which is a little like non-traditional. We weren't like the let's sip Mai Tais on the beach in Hawaii kind of people. So we went a little more extreme and decided, like, let's hike a volcano to celebrate the fact that we got married. And that's what we did. So it was volcanic ash for pretty much that entire 8,000 feet climb. Mount Rinjani is the volcano that actually I think erupted like in September of 2015 or something, not that long ago. But yeah, it's like kind of climbing a giant sand dune. So it's like two steps forward and then you slide back and then two steps forward and you slide back down. So I'm grateful for my boots for getting me up and down safely. I wear the Talus Trek Ultra Dry with the bright green shoelaces. I love having the ankle support. That's super important to me. They're also fairly waterproof, I would say, which is important to me as well because I never know what kind of conditions we're going to find ourselves in. They're pretty lightweight, so they don't totally weigh down my pack if I'm traveling with them on my back. They're just like, I love the green lace. I know that sounds silly, but I love that pop of color too.
VASC has been pushing the limits of trail footwear for over 50 years, with hiking, backpacking, and trail running footwear built to perform on any trail in any condition. Learn more at www.vasque.com. That's www.vasque.com. We're back. And before we jump into how Karima founded Adaptive Climbing Group, I think it's important to share how Karima views disability as a culture rather than a condition.
Because I consider being a person with a disability as a culture, because it really is. We have our own slang, our own terms. We do things that literally no one else does the way we do them. And it's who we are. Yes, we are straight, we're gay, we're white, we're black, we're male, we're women, right? We incorporate all of those cultures. But even amongst that, we are a culture of our own, you know? And it's not because we try to be. It's society made it that way. We have to fill out our applications differently. We have to file our taxes as a different group of people. Every place we go, we got to have a separate entrance. So if that's the case, then it's very hard, I think. I'm not saying it's impossible because I have the most amazing volunteers in my program. But when you are, let's say, leading or creating a service for people with disabilities, it is definitely going to be better if the person leading it is a person with a disability, is connected to the culture that they're actually serving, is a user as well as a provider, because they're thinking a little bit differently. And they're considering also the experiences they had as a person with a disability too.
So it makes sense that Karima would be the one to start hosting adaptive climbing sessions. But back in 2012, she had no idea it would turn into what it is today.
Why and when did you start the adaptive climbing group?
I didn't do it on purpose. I know it sounds stupid. It sounds weird. Now, remember, I was super superbly obsessed with this climbing thing, right?
Yeah.
And I was at Eastern Mountain Sports. And I was also part of this support group at NYU Hospital. It was a cool one because we just didn't sit there and cry about how crappy life is. We did activities every month. We went out and we did something. Water skiing, bowling. Every month we had an activity and we get to, you know, vote or choose it. And I was like, yo, we should go rock climbing. And all my amputee friends were like, what? Crazy. Stupid. Who does that? And I was like, no, check my YouTube. I post these videos. This is from my trip to Colorado. It's what I do now. This is my jam.
Karima approached the advisor to the group, Dr. Jeffrey Heckman, about having one day for climbing.
He was very prolific in how I see and activate as a person with a disability, as an amputee.
The biggest hurdle to getting started was the cost. With a fixed budget, Karima tapped into her network.
I go back using my connections with Eastern Mountain Sports to talk to like the marketing manager there and my boss and, oh, who do you know here? And calling a lot of adaptive sports organizations, let people, you know about it. And the marketing manager of Eastern Mountain Sports connected me to Lance Pinn, who is one of the co-founders of Brooklyn Boulder's climbing gym. Me living in Brooklyn, being a Brooklynite, that was the gym that I climbed at. And at the time was one of like two climbing gyms of the entire New York City. I said, hey, you ever had any disabled people like come climb in your gym or anything? And he was like, no. And I was like, could I? I'm not very good at this relationship building thing yet. He was like, yeah, sure. And I was just like, so, you know, like, I don't have any money. He was able to pick some off-peak time, like on Thursday and Friday, where we could come in for free, where the staff wouldn't be like overcome and would be able to assist me.
Yeah.
I had called up 510 and they had given me some gift certificate for shoes, climbing shoes. So I did like a little fundraiser at the front desk to help pay for some stuff. And then over the time, it took me like 6 months to plan this thing that I wanted to do for just one day, you know, it's hilarious, right? Well, I was working two jobs, so.
So Karima was on her way to planning this climbing day, but she wasn't sure how it would go over with others until she connected with Ronnie Dixon, an adaptive climber.
I hadn't seen any other amputee climbers ever. Like, I thought I was like it.
She got in touch with Ronnie first over Facebook and then in person for a conference called Amputee Coalition.
It's like the OR for amputees. It's like 800 people attend. And they have all of these like adaptive sports things to try out and what the latest prosthetics are and all these disability superstars doing clinics. And he had a mobile wall up for rock climbing. And it's about 12 New Yorkers from my amp crew, my champ amps, that went. And I've been trying to like talk up this whole rock climbing thing where they thought I was like completely crazy, right? So then I pushed them towards this activity, told, you know, Ronnie about them, like, let's get them up on this wall so then they'll see, they'll know what we know. And the smiles that I saw, because it's different, like when you know yourself, you're feeling good, but to see them, and some of them had some other different issues and things going on. One or two people were kind of dealing with like personal and emotional issues and depression that comes with becoming an amputee, depending on how it happens to you. And to see the smiles that I saw on their faces as each one of them ascended that wall, it's the smile on the descent after they knew they did it.
Yeah.
I was, okay, this has to happen. This has to happen. So then I'm like, okay, how can I get people to know, go? No one knows me, right? I'm in my first year or so of being an amputee. Nobody knows who I am, right? How can I get people to trust me to go do this thing? So I was like, look, Ronnie, everybody knows you for this climbing thing. Have you ever been to New York? He lives in Florida. You want to come to New York? I could fly you out, but you got to sleep on my couch. And he was like, all right. So I was like, bam, we're in there. So I started writing press releases. I started sending stuff out and putting up a registration and doing all these things. So I started to get like real good responses. The crazy thing about the responses was not the brand responses or the organization responses. It was the people response. I was preparing for like 10, 15 people, right? I didn't have like a YouTube channel, no advertisements, right?
Yeah.
Have a website. At zero, zippo, just my email. And then people were registering from Pennsylvania, Connecticut, New Jersey, to come to this thing. I didn't know that there was an adaptive climbing in like the tri-state area. You know what I mean? I was just thinking where I live. I had no idea because I also was a new amputee. So I didn't really know like all the things that I know now about access and adaptive sports. I just was very much on my own personal experience at that point. And so our one day had to turn into 2 days because the amount of registrants we had.
Karima had no idea how successful it would be.
Before the end of the day, they were like, oh, so when are we going to do this again? I was like, again? You know, this took me like 6 months. I got two jobs.
Adaptive climbing became a weekly climbing day at Brooklyn Boulders, and Karima ultimately got it subsidized so that people with extensive medical bills or a fixed income would still be able to attend. And because of her passion for this work, Karima ended up going back to school for rec therapy. Over time, her adaptive climbing program kept growing. Brooklyn Boulders opened a second gym in Somerville, Mass., and wanted to bring the adaptive climbing there, too. It was then that Karima realized that she needed to formalize adaptive climbing group.
We had to get more organized because it was like, sometimes you'd be like, oh, well, I don't have enough Belay volunteers or enough of my friends who climb to help out. And, oh, this guy has to leave because his assisted ride comes up at this time. He won't get to climb. So I had to become a little more organized. Then I was like, okay, I need a Facebook page. I need like logos. I need like, you know, like those things like slowly kind of came into place. It wasn't something I was going, yeah, I want to do that.
Yeah.
This is what I want. It was just like, this is fun. I like it. And then, you know, just by experience, I think, and then also just researching,
yeah,
you know, and getting to know people. And I'm also very like much about Facebook and social media. I think like part of our base is because we're very active and we're very good about sharing stories and helping people kind of learn more and relate. And it's very community guided. There's no big giant marketing department. There's no, you know, like yeah, it's 99% volunteers, everything you see.
Oh.
And someone goes, oh, how'd you get the story in the New York Times? I was like, I don't know. Just someone called me. Oh, so you didn't like go to, did you write a, I didn't write no press releases. I would definitely say 95% of anything that you've seen us in, I had absolutely nothing to do with.
Mm. Just important work.
Yeah, just you're just doing what you like to do. People like it and they tell somebody and then someone says, hey, you want to do this? Okay. It was only when we started competing and we created the athlete platform, all these different adaptive climbing programs started this platform with USA Climbing to include us in to the paraclimbing that was going on in the rest of the world. Did I have to really start putting that forward because I want the best for these athletes who are competing because that's a different thing. You know, recreation is different than saying I'm a professional climber.
Now Adaptive Climbing Group has programs in New York, Somerville, Chicago, and they're supporting athletes to compete all over the world. And to put that impact into numbers,
we got over 1,000 people with disabilities climbing last year. And that's a very large number of people.
Yeah.
When you think about the fact that we have 4 metro sites that have regular weekly sessions. Then in addition to that, we have our monthly youth sessions in each metro location that are just like youth only based sessions. And then we have special events, outdoor trips, you know, ice climbing, rock climbing. You know, when we go camping and we go hiking, you know, to the crag and giving those sort of experiences as well. So when you add all those things together, even I was surprised at the number, you know?
Yeah.
It was like October and we were already over 1,000.
Oh, that's so cool. That's such a positive impact to have on that many people.
Yeah. I don't think it's, I never would like to say it's me because there's a couple of dozen people that I trust with my vision and who volunteer their time and believe in this access too. And I understand as the founder, I did play an important role, but I never feel that my role is the most important role. Just the vision is.
Definitely. You told me that there's a culture of disability, like there's a language around it. And it's really special for people to climb together who can speak the same language. How can people who me, you know, I don't have a disability, like how can I be really welcoming to other people if, say, I'm in the climbing gym or even just on the trail?
I think that I know it's not one of the most important things ever, but one thing that you can remember is we know how to ask for help when we need it. I think that's a really important thing for all people to know, because sometimes people give what they think is help.
Yeah.
And you may get a reaction that you weren't expecting because you're working the Good Samaritan Messiah role. And a lot of times people are like, oh, I feel good about myself. I just helped this visually impaired guy. And it's not about like, because that's not that person's experience, right? So
yeah.
So it's like trying to keep the perspective. Yes, you cannot be blind. Yes, you cannot be a wheelchair user. And we're not expecting you to completely understand, but just kind of respect the personal space of the individual with disability. And then that will help open up the lines of communication by allowing that person to communicate. You treat people like people.
Yeah.
And then everybody becomes the same. I mean, that's it doesn't get much simpler than that. You know, like he likes to climb. You like to climb. That's it. Your bait is totally different. You like big wall harnesses. He likes using the wheelchair harness. Still climbing, right? Simplify it. A lot of times we're fighting for inclusion so much, we tend to exclude. But all the special languages and the words and the groups and the climbers are climbers.
Mm.
People are people.
Yeah.
That is what makes us feel accepted, is when you stop treating us and reminding us about our what makes us different from you.
Mm-hmm.
Now, there is a line there, of course. There are accommodations, right? There's special equipment that people need to use. So I'm not saying that, oh, no, you shouldn't supply an off-road wheelchair as an option at your preserve, or that you shouldn't have accessible parking at your state park. I'm just saying, when you're on the trail together, you're on the trail together. You're there for the same reason. And then you welcome everybody as they are. I remember a couple times I was, this is before like anybody really knew adaptive climbing group. And I was in the climbing gym, my home gym, and I had my harness on and my climbing prosthesis is on. I was scoping out routes, like looking for the next thing to climb. Woman comes up to me, stops me, taps me on the shoulder because I have my headphones in.
Hmm.
She goes, are you climbing? Yeah, that kind of tone. I was like, well, are you here to climb? That was my answer.
Hmm.
And then it's also the other way. Like, how does people who are feeling that way respond, right? And I also find that a lot of people that I've met, I'm not speaking for everyone, but a lot of people I've met will avoid places, not because someone said that they weren't welcome, but they had an incident, you know, of feeling different, feeling not like everybody else. And they were like, yeah, it's not the place for me. But they're not going to go and complain to the front desk. They're not going to always write a scathing review. They just won't come anymore.
That starts to kind of perpetuate expectations too, that, you know, only a certain type of people should be climbing or should be there.
Right, exactly. And then some people just don't have the experience or they don't know what to do, and avoidance is the best thing.
Mm.
So I've heard stories from climbers who like reach out to us, you know, asking for resources and help, you know, say, oh yeah, I had an incident. You know, I called the climbing gym and said I wanted to come in and climb, and if I can get up a layer. And then I told them I was in a wheelchair, and they're like, well, we don't really have anything like that for you. You know, like, he's already a climber. And, you know, but he has to jump through hoops to get belay assistance, you know. And so the more people who are educated in disability etiquette on and off the wall, and also the different ways that people climb, just like how people learned how to boulder and learn how to ice climb. This is a different style or discipline of climbing. That's how the International Federation of Sport Climbing see it. They see it as a different discipline of climbing. And when we compete during the week, all those disciplines are climbing that week for the world championship representing our country.
Mm.
I know we're a young toddler country of only 250 years old and we're in our toddler years, but you know, that would be one thing that I would love to see people not be so afraid of is difference.
Yeah. One of the lines that I love in the mission of Adaptive Climbing Group is that you're working with people and taking their already existing abilities to help them participate in the sport. Like, I love how it points out that everyone has the ability to do it, and you're just helping to facilitate it.
I just think we all have different abilities. So I have sport climber friends, and they're all great climbers. But what makes them great sometimes is just their style, right? Their own ability. The word disability is the word given to us used in society, right?
Mm-hmm.
Like something's missing or something's wrong. And I don't think of it as that. I think of it as an ability. My abilities are different than yours. When we do our volunteer training sessions, are very scenario based. So we could say, oh, this is how you talk to someone who's visually impaired when you're climbing. No, we actually blindfold the person and they trade off and they become a visually impaired person and try to climb this route. And their friend is trying to guide them and give them the right beta for someone who can't see holds, right?
Yeah.
And have to describe movement. So being in that situation, that person gets just a glimpse of what it would be like if they were visually impaired. And now they have this sort of better understanding of like, wow, I really need to get my language together and show him where the rest spot is. Cause if I was up there, this is what I would feel like, right?
Mm.
This is what it feels like when I was visually impaired for an hour. And then with the wheelchair harness system, we make sure that the individuals are trying out the wheelchair harness system. You know, they're looking at it and they're like, oh, does this climb make it easier? And they're like, oh, actually, this wasn't super easy. Actually, this is a little harder. Oh, if I had to campus a climb all the time, you know, like, what would this be like? You know, having those experiences, yes, I can't make someone paraplegic, but my style of training our volunteers also breaks down, you know, barriers and views on abilities and what they mean and how every climber is a climber, but with just a different ability.
Yeah, that's incredible. You're creating empathy. People are feeling empathy. They actually can get a little bit of a sense.
Yeah, I'm over the sympathy.
Yeah.
So I'm good on that.
Yeah.
I need you to understand where I'm coming from.
Mm.
And it's a little bit more difficult. There's nothing I can do to make you say, hey, this is how it feels to get your leg cut off and wear this device, you know, 18 hours a day. You know, like, I can't tell you what it feels like or what that is like. But at least in our climbing style, we can show you what it's like to climb that way. And that hopefully will at least open the way for conversations to happen and friendships to develop, which they have.
Yeah. Yeah. That's amazing.
I get tired. Don't think I get tired. I'm like, you know what? There are a few things that I've stuck with this long in my life. Definitely not a hairstyle. but, you know, each day I meet like someone new, someone who kind of like invigorates me to put a little extra oomph in my step, whether it's one of my volunteer leads or one of our climbers that like either comes up with a great idea or brings new life to something that's been existing for a long time. And that also inspires me and invigorates this because like, I don't just come up with all the ideas, you know, but I'm glad that we have this platform of sport that not only invigorates healthy lifestyle, but also something fun, something community building among people with disabilities themselves, because there's actually disabilities that normally don't interact with each other. And this sport has made that happen too, as well. And then a lot of the volunteers, though their title is volunteers, have built like really strong, amazing friendships. They've gone out and do amazing things together. They go out trad climbing without the programming and they go skydiving together. They go take road trips. I'll be like looking at people's Facebook and be like, oh, cool. They went to this concert. They invited me. I'm going to go to this concert. And I see that all the time. And that's another thing that also like really warms my heart, because it's through personal experiences that things really spread. You know, someone tells another person, I'm not going to buy an ad in a newspaper. I'm not going to make a commercial like a lot of these nonprofits, because what we have is real and organic. And that's how I like to see it go.
Learn more about Adaptive Climbing Group at www.adaptiveclimbinggroup.org. And as Karima says,
Well, you can go to our website. Just like any nonprofit, there's an engine, and the gas is usually money.
So if you can, donate. And make sure to follow along on social media. CREMA has a whole crew of volunteers that share their stories of adaptive climbing. Thank you to VASC for their support of She Explores this month. Learn more at www.vasc.com. If you enjoy She Explores, you'll probably enjoy our sister podcast, Women on the Road. Hosted by Laura Hughes, it's filled with stories of honest experiences of life on the road from the women who've lived them firsthand. And if you enjoy listening to She Explores, please take the time to review us on Apple Podcasts or wherever you listen. It'll help other people find us. Even better, share She Explores with a friend. We're on Instagram, Facebook, and Twitter, so make sure to tag us so we'll see it. Until next week, catch up with us in our She Explores podcast Facebook group. There we talk about recent episodes, give each other advice, and share resources and more stories about our time in the outdoors. Music is by Lee Rosevear, Maiden, and Kevin J. Simon. Until then, have fun out there.